everybody. I am William DeHewitt, and I am broadcasting live from the vast plains of the Free State, somewhere in the old Boer Republic. Yes, folks, like Uncle Adolf, I too have a dream. It is to live in an exclusively all-white Boer nation here in South Africa, where my folk and I can live peacefully as healthful Aryans without parasite Jews chewing and without their Negroid and mixed-race proxy armies attacking my folk and destroying our white civilizations. As a white man, as an Aryan, I long for a nation without Jew supremacism and terrorism and international Zionism, communism, capitalism, and all other degenerate anti-white Jew philosophy. Yes, folks, I have a dream that all white folk will live in harmony in a society where every white man, woman, and child and family will benefit from their own creativity and hard works, along with reaping the benefits of the natural resources that Mother Nature provides within the borders of our nation. Yes, folks, today it seems unlikely that my dream will come true as the Jew governments and military industrial infrastructures within all of our white nations, well, are no longer our own. They have been slowly infiltrated and taken over by the enemy, international Jew, who uses his poisonous lies, influence, and foreign hordes of non-white proxy armies to destroy and make those of us Aryans still residing in our lands to become disenfranchised, uncomfortable, unwelcome, and really in danger of our own lives. Our enemies are so hateful and so brutal that they have, well, they've even made it illegal for us to merely seek out, let alone, folks, to actually stand up for our own interests in our own lands. Yes, as a result, my folk, history, and heritage is being erased before my very eyes. So, will white folk ever stand up to our enemies? Well, every day I'm reminded of the struggle my folk and I face when I see Negroids littering, pissing, and shitting in the streets. Negroids murdering, raping, pillaging, and destroying white within the country that our Aryan ancestors built. And finally, some white folks are getting angry, thankfully. However, it seems that nobody has any solutions, nor will do anything about this Jew-inflicted, Negroid, and mixed-race problem we have in all of our lands. I often think to myself, folks, are there any other strong Aryan men out there who are as fed up as I am? Where are they? Will anything ever change? I've also thought to myself, if anything is ever to change, maybe a thorough examination of past struggles and movements just might help us to learn and to recognize successful strategies and tactics that would help our folk, and as well to examine the pitfalls which must be avoided. One such examination I've looked into is The War of the Flea, written by Robert Tabor. Originally published in 1965, the book takes a detailed and critical look at the conditions and strategy of guerrilla war. Tabor draws his conclusions from an analysis of the patterns that repeat across a variety of past struggles, whether they be Aryan or not. Okay? Now, a closely interwoven narrative of specific real-world examples and abstract theory and strategy, War of the Flea presents an easily accessible yet very informative mapping of guerrilla, anti-colonial, and liberation wars. That's right, folks. Anti-colonial. Yeah, because, as I've explained in the past, Aryans have never been the colonists in these lands that we live in. I've explained in the past that the colony of South Africa is a colony of the Jews. You see, Jews, the Dutch East India Company, brought Aryan folk to South Africa to really build up the Cape of Good Hope. We were, in essence, their slaves. Now, we also had another group of Aryans come a little later, after 1652, when Van Riebeck brought, you know, a lot, most of the Cape Dutch to this colony. But yes, not too long after that, there were a group of Germanics who became known as the Boers, who created and founded several republics, which had nothing to do with the colonization of Southern Africa. It's very important that we understand this and know this history, okay? But back to this guerrilla war, or this War of the Flea. Tabor outlines the guerrilla struggle as being primarily a, quote, political engagement, rather than one of military force. Now, the goal of the guerrilla, lone wolf, or insurgent group is not to militarily defeat the enemy who's lording over us, but to create a, quote, climate of collapse, unquote, in which it becomes impossible for the status quo to maintain rule as their house of cards comes tumbling down around them. Yes, I can only imagine, folks, how quickly the Negroid and mixed-race proxy armies of the Jew enemy will scatter once the head of the Jew snake is cut off. The conditions will then be right for Aryan folk to reclaim our nation and remove the rest of those who don't belong. Tabor notes that guerrilla warfare consistently follows a three-stage strategy. Now, the first stage is a strategic defense. The lone wolf or small cell picks and focuses on targets. Now, these targets can be enemy individuals and or institutions, buildings, right? While avoiding any serious confrontation with the overwhelming force of the opponent. Now, the second stage is the struggle moves into a phase of strategic stalemate, wherein neither side has the force nor the resources necessary for a decisive victory. And the third stage, as the guerrilla group builds, the necessary strength, and the opponent group suffers a slow eroding of its power base thanks to the climate of collapse, well, then the conflict moves in the strategic offensive stage where the guerrilla force takes the initiative and brings down the enemy. That's right, folks. If we, as Aryan folk in our respective lands, ever have any hope of regaining or reclaiming our lands, I am at the point to where I can't think of anything else other than becoming, as they say, revolutionaries. I don't see, I mean, come on, folks. We know that voting is not going to work. We can't vote within their system, right? The only voting I can think of that'll work is like corrosion of conformity's way of voting. ... With a bullet. Yeah, that's a great song, actually, if you guys aren't familiar with it. Corrosion of conformity. Vote with a bullet. So, can these tactics be applied to our own situation? Well, the core of Tabor's analysis of a staged strategy focusing first on survival and irregular action against strategic targets and then scaling up to more coordinated and decisive action as more individuals take the initiative to join the struggle. While all-out armed battles of any sort are unwise, and the principles that have made the War of the Fleas successful over and over around the world hold much promise for us if we're ready to learn from them and develop our own unique strategies for waging and winning a decisive war against our enemies whom are lording over us, oppressing us, genociding us. Yeah, folks, it's not going to, we can't be sitting around waiting for Yahweh or for Jesus or anybody to come and save us. It is up to us as an Aryan folk to take action, to get up off of our knees, and to stand up for ourselves. My ex-wife used to say, get up off your, wait, let me think of how she said this. She said, it's better to, or if you, no, this is it. If you're going to pray, pray on your feet, with your eyes open and with a gun in your hand. I can't remember exactly how she phrased it, but otherwise what she was saying is get up off your knees, stand up like an Aryan, and have a gun in your hand. Because, well, my ex-wife loved guns. Yes, she actually taught me an awful lot about guns because I never really was the type of individual who was really that interested in guns. But when I met her, and, well, she opened my eyes. Let's just say that, okay? So the guerrilla or lone wolf model of dismantling an oppressive anti-white reign of terror will never be a realistic option without the loyalty and material support of the white population. Folks, I cannot stress this enough. In fact, what I will do right now is tell you about a story that I had, I was told this morning by my partner. It was audio coming from WhatsApp. She's in quite a few groups. South African groups, and this audio that she shared with me let's see, where is it? Yeah, here it is. It was a Boer's farm that caught on fire this morning, or maybe yesterday morning. Now, basically, this farm caught on fire, and the other farmers and people around this farm, all the help that was received was a farmhand or a Negroid was sent from one of the other farmers to help, get the cattle and the cattle to safety. Okay? Now, this, folks, is awful. He has this man whose farm caught on fire. I wonder how that happened. Well, he has, because of this, no belief anymore in his poor folk. He says that it's everyone for himself, and that 6,000 hectares of his farm were burned, and nobody helped him. Nobody except a farmhand, a Negroid, sent by one of the other farmers. Well, that was the only help he received. And so 200 to 300 cattle are missing, and only 5 other Boer folks, besides this farmhand, helped out. This man says that, quote, we are not ready for war, and not even a and we're not even a shadow of our forefathers. Yes, our lives are at stake, and we won't even stand up for ourselves, nor lift a finger to help one another. We should be ashamed. Abso-frickin-lutely, poor farmer. God, I wish I... Gosh, I cannot get over, oh, you only received 5 other Boers and a farmhand to help you with your farm that's caught on fire. And again, I just wonder how that farm caught on fire, folks. Do I really have to say it? So, in other words, our Boer folk, well, we've been whitewashed and race mixed out of existence. What this guy, this Boer farmer, is implying is that because only 5 other Boers came to help, his explanation is something that really I would think of. And he said that he thinks that our folk, our Boer folk, have been so race-mixed and so mentally and spiritually whitewashed through the Jew propaganda and the Jew media and basically the Jew society we live in. Our folk have either been mentally whitewashed or race-mixed out of existence. And this explains why only 5 Boers came to help this man on his farm. Really, I can't think of anything otherwise. So, back to this war of the flea. Additionally, the guerrillas in all of the conflicts that Tabor cites were fought for greater self-determination. Yes, I'm going to repeat that. Greater self-determination. All I hear in this country of South Africa is self-determination, folks. And I've explained this and have done 3 shows on self-determination when it comes to South Africa. And it is pathetic, folks, the type of self-determination that Boer folk stand for. They want to actually follow the statutes and laws of the United Nations. How in the world can we ever have a Boer Republic if we're going to follow the statutes and laws of the United Nations. That is the most retarded concept I've ever could imagine to even think of. Folks, if you want your own nation, your own republic, you have to take action. After you take action, you have to reject the system. You have to reject it all. When it comes down to their shekels, when it comes down to their laws, their statutes, their jobs, their corporations, everything. You have to reject it all. You can't, you know, have your own country, but then accept their shekels, because the shekels are what is actually enslaving us. So what good would it be for a self-determined group of boers to have our own land, use the laws and statutes of the United Nations, on top of it, use the Rothschild's shekel system? It's ridiculous. Anyone who can't see how ridiculous this is really needs to either shut the hell up or, you know, I don't know, start listening more to the Hewitt House of Publications and Radio. I've outlined and broken down so that, you know, anybody can understand it clearly. So this gorilla or lone wolf model dismantling an impressive anti-white reign of terror will never be a realistic option without the loyalty and material support of the Aryan population, right? Additionally, the gorillas in all the conflicts that Tabor cites were fought for, like I said, greater self-determination. They were not fighting against the basis of their own folk in society, but as a resistance movement against an enemy who has oppressed them and has taken over their civilization. What type of civilization do we want to leave our Aryan children to inherit, folks? Will my dream of a nation exclusively for Boers and nations for all other white South African and, you know, white folk around the world ever come true? I sure hope it will, folks, and I will not stop fighting until it does. But this war of the flea is only but one area I had been looking into recently. Last week, Mike Sledge and I also referred to a controversial book by James Mason titled Siege. Yes, Siege. That book where a lot of the callers into a particular network are labeled as siege tards. Yeah, folks, I tended to agree with that particular network about Siege until Mike Sledge read the book and then encouraged me to actually read it for myself. Now, Mike said that 65% or so of the book is absolutely spot on, and that the other 35% or so, yeah, you can take it or leave it. I would actually go on to say that about 75% of Siege, in my estimation and Ed's educated opinion, it's spot on. It's right on the money. The only part that I don't necessarily agree with was how he viewed, what's his name? Manson, yeah, Charles Manson. He really thinks that Charles Manson is a great thinker and, you know, I don't know. Maybe if I had more information and could wipe my mind of all the Jew propaganda that has been, you know, labeled onto Manson, maybe if I had more in-depth knowledge, maybe I could look at him differently, because Mason just did not really convince me that Manson is some great visionary. But really, besides the Mason and the mention of Anton Jew LaVey, really, folks, the book is spot on. And it is about revolution, taking revolutionary tactics to stand up for ourselves. You know, I wrote that article that I browsed through, you know, just got done browsing through for you, The War of the Fleet. Reading Siege actually reminded me of that article I wrote. And yes, you have to actually stand up for yourself. Now, the difference is, you know, when you talk about this topic, people might get scared, you know, of you, or think that you're like a Fed or something whenever you bring up revolution or, you know, even suggest violence. I mean, what do you think a revolution is, folks? It is acts of violence, random acts of violence. Now, I am not one of those who will say, I'm not here to promote violence. Yeah, I don't know. Take it how you want, folks. I'm not saying to go out and be stupid and create, you know, random acts of violence. I'm not saying to go out and harm or hurt anybody. But you, if you are a revolutionary and have a revolutionary spirit, you will know if it's appropriate to take some sort of action. Okay? That's all I'm trying to say here. Now, action is needed if we ever want to be free from this Jew tyranny that we are all being enslaved and oppressed by. You know, we're being genocided, folks, and we can never really come up with solutions to stop this genocide. And, you know, people want to fight and they want to stand up. Oh, yeah, I have a dream, folks. I have a dream, just like Uncle Adolf. Feel it, it's war, our enemies tell us. Feel it, it's war. Yep, welcome to South Africa, where the Negroid and Afrikaner Jew rule, and the white Aryan race is a powerless minority. How did we get to this point, folks? And are we really powerless? Well, unfortunately, a lot of my folk believe that we are indeed powerless because, well, we're caught in a genocide our enemies have been planning and implementing against us for centuries. But to be honest with you, I really do see things a bit differently. I, living in this country, do see glimmers of hope. For example, when I go into different towns around South Africa, I do see Negroids everywhere, folks. Yes, the towns are infested with these savages littering, shitting, and pissing in the streets. Yes, folks, I am not exaggerating. especially when I live high up in the mountains, somewhere in the Karoo. I, on a daily basis, folks, would see Negroids littering and pissing in the streets. And yes, I did see Negroids shitting in the streets. Not as often as them littering and pissing, but I did indeed see Negroids shitting in the streets. It's utterly repulsive. So, it is really disgusting, folks. And I've learned that, you know, if I need to go into town to shop or, you know, pick up something, that the best time to go is really right before they close. Now, I'm talking about on the weekends at this particular point. Yes, after a long, hard day of doing nothing but destroying, the Negroids get tired and they start to clear out and go home to their shacks in the township to party. When I go into a shop on Saturday, such as Pick and Pay, before closing time, my eyes light up, folks, and I feel tremendous joy. Yeah, there are mostly Aryan folk there. Where do they all come from? Because throughout the week, I really don't see many Aryan folk. Now, where I live now, it seems to be where there are lots more around. But at the time I wrote this article, I was living in a very small town high up in the mountains somewhere in the Karoo, and we had to go to the bigger towns on the weekends to get our shopping done. So, yes, this is what I noticed before the shops closed. Basically, it's all poor and Aryan folk in the shops, and I've never seen so many gathered all at once in a particular place. And like I said, this brings me great joy, because I don't see too many of my folk in everyday life. Now, maybe there are more of us in South Africa than they're telling us, right? How can we really trust the numbers given by the Negroid government? Is it not just another psychological operation to break our Aryan spirits and keep us feeling hopeless? Noticing so many of my Aryan folk at one time got me to thinking, oh yeah, Jews, you don't like it when I start to think. Is the South African Negroid and Afrikaner Jew government telling us in so many words that us Aryan folk are a powerless, dwindling minority caught in a genocide to kill our morale? Yes, we are a minority. And yes, we are being genocided. But are we really powerless? I say no. We are not powerless. We've been taught by our enemies to perceive that we are powerless. This is what our enemies want us to fear. I see uneducated, disorganized clowns who think a Sangoma, which is a witch doctor, makes them invincible and that they can't be killed. Yes, a Sangoma is a Negroid witch doctor. Now, in reality, we are not victims, folks. Are enough of us to take us and make a difference. That is really their biggest fear, they dread most. Every time they brutally murder one of our, they are, in essence, challenging us to stand up, and by not retaliating back, well, basically, we're telling them that we're weak. Now, many of my readers on social media, and they tell me that we can't defend ourselves. because we've turned in our guns. Yes, folks, hindsight is 2020, and it has also become self-evident that turning in our weapons was a foolish thing to do. However, my point is, we are the descendants of our Aryan ancestors. We are descendants of the great Aryan race who have accomplished so many tremendous feats in our history. What makes us any different from them? If you do some homework, you will quickly realize making your own gun or weapons is not that difficult. Now, when I say making our own guns or weapons, if you even do the simplest Google search, you can learn how to make a zip gun or a simple weapon. The point of explaining you this is, folks, that yes, back before 1992, around 92, 94, the government there basically told the South African folk that they had to turn in their weapons. The churches were telling them to turn in their weapons, just as the the new ANC government. And yeah, unfortunately, folks, a lot of the Boer and Aryan folk turned in their weapons foolishly. So this is why I, merely put the idea out there that we need to learn how to make our own weapons. All right? Making a zip gun or creating your own weapon, if you don't want to be genocided by a pack of Negroids, well, you better have something at the ready to defend yourselves with. Investors made themselves great. Why can't we? And don't you think for a minute that they didn't face struggles similar to ours? The Negroid and Afrikaner Jew government is desperately trying to break our spirit. However, I am here to tell you, the DeHewitt House of Radio listener, that we are not powerless and we are not spiritually dead. We are not defeated yet, and we will come out of this on top if we stop playing by their rules, if we stop playing the part that they think we should play and start living the way that Aryan Boer folk of the Aryan race are meant to live, which is by the laws of nature. That's right, folks, the laws of nature. So what? We don't have many weapons to defend ourselves with. But that does not mean that we cannot study, get creative, and produce our own weapons to protect ourselves. I refuse to go down without a fight, and we will not be ruled by fear. They will fear us if they continue to intimidate us. And it's about damn time we stand up and end this genocide. We are not weak and we are not powerless. Our Aryan spirit is not dead. We shall not play by their rules which enslave us. And we will start to play the part and live the way our great ancestors did. The Aryan race will break free from our shackles, unite, and rise up to become the great white Aryan race again. That is, if we want to survive. So it's time you stop apologizing for being white. No more white guilt. No more white flight. What are we waiting for? For another one of our folk to be brutally murdered by a Negroid without putting up a fight? I hope my words inspire you, folks. I truly do. Oh, so many anti-white ads And you know, I don't watch much television, but I actually saw an Adopt a White ad. Yes, it is really a taboo for white folk in Africa to actually adopt a white child. Yes, it seems as if ANC government, whom is controlled by Jews and run by Negroids, they want us Aryan and Boer folk, well, to adopt Niglets. Yeah, they don't want us to adopt white babies. I wonder why. Another story that I found to be concerns the university, folks. Yes, here in South Africa, there is going, or actually right now, it's being erected, a university that is for Afrikaans speakers. Right, Afrikaans speaking university. While I find this wonderful, I'm sure that it'll still be the same old, you know, anti-white propaganda, you know, just being taught in Afrikaans. But what I found to be amusing was that these particular South African Negroids are all bent out of shape over this Afrikaans-speaking university. Now, Negroids claim that an Afrikaans-speaking university is an attack against blacks and, well, their languages here in South Africa. Yes, I will repeat myself there. An Afrikaans university is, according to Negroids, an attack against black languages in South Africa. Their thought process is that, well, if we have an Afrikaans-speaking school, that next they'll start wiping out the black languages. I honestly cannot see their concept here. They're trying to compare it to apartheid and racism. You see, it's okay for Negroids to have their universities where they speak Xhosa and Zulu or whatever the hell other clicking and clacking language that they use. Yeah, it's okay for them. But as soon as, you know, Boer folk want to learn and have a university in their own language, well, now all of a sudden that's racist. I'm sick and tired of this ridiculous argument by these Negroids. The truth is, folks, that they're against an African-speaking university because South Africans must be genocided and are not allowed to separate these. Whom are genociding us? In other words, folks, according to these Negroids, Aryan and folk must accept our genocide, and we must not stick or in high regard our languages, our history, our culture. Oh, as soon as you do that, oh, that's racist. As the poor Negroids, you know, they find it offensive. They find it offensive just for us being who we are. They look at us every day and they can see and feel the ineptness. They can see and feel their inferiority. they can see and feel just how degenerate the Aryan race is, loaded with genius, with creators and creativity. Oh, that's another thing I see here on the South African TV, where they're having these ads that are, they're trying to recruit, for like television shows, their creativity. Yes, folks, Negroids in South Africa. A university that is going to be taught in Afrikaans. And these Negroids are all up their panties in a bunch because they feel threatened by this Afrikaans-speaking university. They feel that if we're allowed to actually have a university that appeals to Aryan folk, to poor folk in this country, that this somehow will bring back apartheid. I don't see their logic. I don't understand how they could actually think that just a Afrikaans-speaking university can somehow harm them. But leave it to the Negroid mind. Leave it to their creativity. These Negroids think that an Afrikaans-speaking university is an attack on their culture, on their languages, such as Xhosa and Zulu, and their clicking and clacking and all their other languages. I do not see their logic, but I can tell you what this really is all about. It is about envy. Yes, envy. Negroids see the beauty and the genius and the creativity of the Aryans. And every day, these Negroids see and feel just how inferior they really are when they look at our properties or when they look at our appearance. They feel inferior just by looking at us. And, you know, envy is when, like, if they can't have it or have something, nobody can have it, right? So these Negroids, they beg and they plead for us to hire them as yard boys, garden boys, as maids. And then you have to be on their arses every 5 minutes because they don't have the creativity or the thought process to actually know what to do next. You have to be on their arses. They can't even think to wipe the top of the refrigerator off and dust it. They can't think to pull the weeds here or to trim something there. No, you have to tell them to do it. They have no creativity, no foresight. It's, I don't know what to say. It's hilarious if it wasn't so damn frustrating. So yes, they are indeed envious. And they see what we work for. And folks, we are very capable to clean our own homes, to tend our own gardens. But if we do not, you know, allow them to do it, well, then they feel we're being racist, and we can't have that, don't you know? So most white people succumb to the pressure here in South Africa and hire a maid or a garden boy. I, folks, for one, am against hiring them. When my deceased wife and I were, in our home, We had a garden boy and we had a maid. And I hated it. I cannot see giving them anything to help support them. But, I don't know, at certain times, I guess we did need the help when we were moving between houses. And so, yes, we did indeed hire a maid and a garden boy. My point is, folks, they don't have the creativity in the genius of the Aryan. And because of this, they hate us. And this ties to the Afrikaans speaking university. They feel threatened that we would have a university being taught in Afrikaans. This somehow brings back feelings of apartheid. And they can't stand it. You see, I love the idea of a university being taught in Afrikaans. I wish that the content or the curriculum would, you know, would actually be pro-Aryan or pro-Boer. I'm sure it won't be, but at least we're taking one step in the right direction of it being taught in Afrikaans. This is a form of separation, not apartheid, okay? And why is it? Why do these Negroids hate it when Aryans want to separate from them and the rest of society? Why do they hate it when we desire to separate from them? All I hear coming out of these Negroids' mouths is that it's racist to actually want to be apart from them. I don't understand it, because all they do is claim that we oppress them and that we enslave them and we do every other harmful thing under the sun that's possible to them. But yet we want to separate from them, and that's racist. You can't be separate from the Negroids. We cannot be separate from the rotten parasite Jew who terrorizes us. Trying to figure out solutions to separate, folks. Oh, really, I know where to begin. We really need to have dialogues like this amongst ourselves. We must, folks, first learn to reject this Jew system. We must take ourselves slowly out of it, slowly out of this system. And we must find a home amongst like-minded Aryans in order to develop as Aryans mentally, physically, and spiritually. We must separate. You know, I've learned recently, folks, that there is actually a Jew town. I don't know the name of the town. I just am now remembering this off the top of my head. But it's between Hermanus and Maria. You see, they are allowed to separate. The Aryan and the Boer is not allowed. Look at Orania. I've talked about Orania a lot in the past. Orania, folks, not a Boer or South African Aryan town. It's an Afrikaner Jew town. And if my memory is correct, it was actually Hendrik Verwoerd, the so-called race of South Africa back in the 60s, whose family started Orania. I don't think I'm wrong, but it isn't Verwoerd, it's somebody like Verwoerd. point is that is really Vermoot was groomed to be a leader for the enemy. Vermoot is called a racist. Vermoot is called an anti-Semite. But folks, I am 99.9999% sure that Hendrik Vermoot was put there to make the Aryan race and the Boer folk look bad, because the Jews in the apartheid laws from the United Kingdom, and they used this appearingly, seemingly looking goyim in Vermoot, who was groomed and went to these high echelon universities in England, and then came back here to implement these apartheid laws. Yes, I believe that he was put there so that apartheid could be blamed on Boer and Aryan folk, even though it was the Jews who created and implemented these laws. They just used the goyim frontman, whom I'm really even doubting is a goyim. I'm starting to think that he was like Paul Kruger and a lot of other these so-called Boer leaders. Yep, they're crypto-Jews, like Jan Smut, the filthy Jew that went and rescued 25 Jewish children rather than saving his own Boer folk. Yes, it's despicable. But yes, it is, like the title of my show, no separation, no peace. We must learn how to separate. And I keep saying over and over again, we can only separate when we start to take ourselves out of their Jewish system, when we stop taking their Jewish corporate jobs, when we stop taking their shekels. So yes, after we are able to separate ourselves from the Jew system, action must therefore be taken, which is why I talked about the War of the Flea, which is why I mentioned siege. We need to start thinking about how to separate ourselves. Here in South Africa, we have the old Boer republics that we can legitimately stake a claim to. If enough of us would actually start to fight and take, you know, we can't fight them within their legal system, we must somehow create a system of our own. A new value system, if you will. Too many of our folk are being, you know, divided and conquered. And until we find a way to unify our folk, we're just going to keep spinning our wheels and making no progress whatsoever. I like this idea of a new value system for the Aryan. My good friend Teens Klota from Boer Folk Radio has often spoke of this value system that needs to be created. Because that would be a great start. Where are we to go once we take ourselves out of the system? Where are we to turn? You know, I really do believe that if we would stop waking up in the morning and going to our wage slave jobs, abandoning our families, that we really could make something of ourselves outside of their system. There's no doubt in my mind, folks. We are Aryans. We are Boers. We are very capable of creating something out of really nothing. And if enough of our folk would reject the system and stop going to their wage slave jobs where they make Jew millions upon millions of shekels a year while we bring home a measly paycheck that barely covers our living expenses as slaves. Well, folks, this is how we are to do it. Are we really that comfortable working in the system? Imagine your skill, your trade. Imagine doing what you do, but for yourself, to where you reap the fruit that you sow. And imagine if enough of our folk start to do this. Imagine trading, bartering. Hell, we can even create our own money system if enough of us would reject separating from the Jew system and creating our own system. This means dropping out and, you know, doing what you do, but only by working with your Aryan folk to create some sort of system that excludes the Jew middleman. We are all great at either creating a product or a service or doing something. Every Aryan has a talent. And my idea is to put your talent to good use. If we have enough Aryans who would drop out of this Jew system and we would all start to reap what we sow and trade amongst one another, help create a barter system, if you will. Well, we have to separate and take ourselves out of these neighborhoods that we're in and become cohesive elsewhere. I don't know how we could do this, but we have to figure out somehow how to do it. I don't know. It's not easy, or else we'd be doing it, right? But yes, I truly believe that if we were able, even just a few of us, to separate and to put our talents to good use, we could even create a money system that supports our blood, sweat, and tears, our hard works. And we can also back the currency money system on the natural resources that Mother Nature creates. Yes, I realize we need to find and claim a land first. You know, here in South Africa, it's not that unrealistic because we really do have a right to at least two of the past Boer republics of the Transvaal and of the Orange Free State. If we united, organized, and fought for ourselves, to ream even one of these republics could then do what I'm suggesting to do. To work together as an Aryan folk. To build a universe like they're, you know, this is completely controlled opposition, folks. This university that I'm referring to. Afrikaans Speaking University. And it is being backed sponsored or promoted by Solidarity. Now, Solidarity is an extension of AfriForum. And we know that Greenvolt, or Gruenfeld, or however you pronounce his Jewy name, he's the leader of AfriForum. And we know that's the one of the organizations that claims that there is no white genocide happening in South Africa. But yet, their buddies over at Solidarity want to have this Afrikaans Speaking University. It's very odd that these controlled opposition groups seem to be throwing us a bone, which, you know, makes our folk think, oh, well, maybe they really are on our side. Well, they are absolutely not on our side, folks. They appear at times to be white or pro-white, and they get these niggeroids agitated, which really, I don't know, doesn't really do us any good. But Trade Union Solidarity says that it's flabbergasted by the attacks on the Afrikaans community and the construction of its Afrikaans Medium College. Yes, Solidarity, controlled opposition, all right, has broken ground on the construction of its new 300 million rand Soul Tech College campus in Centurion. The private vocational training college is expanding its premises and was originally founded by Solidarity 12 years ago. Now, this is a quote by Connie Mulder, head of research at Solidarity. We're flabbergasted by the attacks on a linguistic community that's literally spending its own money to facilitate education for its children in its own language. Connie Mulder, head of Solidarity's Research Institute, has rubbished claims that the institution would be racially exclusive. Yes, after this Hauteng MEC for Education, Taniyaza Lesufi raised questions about the motive behind the college. And Connie Mulder says, we don't define Afrikaner as a race. It's a cultural community with self-definition. That is a very interesting quote that Connie Mulder, that Mulder name sounds crypto-Jew to me. She says that we don't define Afrikaner as a race. Well, actually, she's right, because, like I said over and over again, Afrikaner is code word for Jew, and we know Jews are not a race. Jews are opposite of race. They are of mixed race. So, she's actually right on the money, even though she doesn't realize it. In the context that I'm referring to, she's right on the money. Afrikaner is code word for Jew, and Jews are of mixed race, and they cannot be defined as a race. Another quote by Connie Mulder is, as a linguistic community, we feel strongly about having Afrikaans as an educational language. Okay? Now, Mulder claims that anyone willing to receive technical training in Afrikaans is welcome to apply. That includes the Negroids. That includes the Coloreds. But he bemoans what he calls an obsession with race in South Africa and says it's time to put an end. Now, I'm assuming that is Taniyaza Lesufi, okay? Although, I don't know why his concern means anything to us. But he says Solidarity says the privately owned Afrikaans Medium institution will be funded through donations from its members. Yes, that's how I understand it. And Mulder could not provide detail on how diverse the racial makeup of Solidarity's membership is. Meanwhile, MEC Lesufu, or Lesufi, has defended himself against those who have accused him of being anti-Afrikaans. The new Soltech College campus should be completed in 14 months and opens its doors in January 2021. Now let's read more about this Lesufi, whatever the hell his Negroid name is. Kenyaza Lesufi takes a swipe at private Afrikaans university that's under construction. He says there is no room in a non-racial South Africa for reminders of apartheid, says the Gauteng Educational MEC, Kenyaza Lesufi. I'm going to repeat that first sentence. There is no room in a non-racial South Africa for reminders of apartheid. So what's this Negroid saying here? He's saying that there's no room in a non-racial South Africa, or is he joking? How are we a non-racial South Africa? You see, these Negroids, their arguments are just ridiculous. Lesufi took Twitter reposting a video by Reinhardt777 showing men breaking ground for a new private Afrikaans language university. And he says, I just hate racism when I see one. A race-based institution is a non-racial society won't succeed. Please don't remind us about apartheid. Oh, yeah, again, folks, I, William DeHewitt, am also anti-apartheid. But I am anti-apartheid for many different reasons. I was talking about how...
I mean, you're against apartheid... But for many, many reasons. I think it's just important to see how these black South Africans change the story, depending on the situation. I mean, they say that South Africa's not racial now. And we have to get rid of any memory of apartheid. It's important to point out that they're hypocrites. They do recognize race. They put all their energy into noticing the difference between the white Boer and the blacks, and you know, these differences they want to have now in their mind reparations. They're doing the same tactics from their overlords who are influencing them. I mean, the Jews are a race when convenient and are not are a religion when it's convenient or not, or both when it's convenient. And this is what we're seeing. Is South Africa racial or not? These blacks are saying one thing when it suits their purpose one day and another thing when it suits their purpose the other day. That's what I'm hearing from that. So rather than even hearing your points on being against apartheid, I think it's important to stress the hypocrisy coming out of their mouths. And this is the same tactic from the people influencing them, wouldn't you say?
Absolutely, yes. Right on. Good. That's a very good insight there, Richard. Thank you for that. I do, if you don't mind, would love to tell the listeners why I am against apartheid. Because on the surface, it sounds as if I am anti-white for being
right.
Against apartheid. Okay.
Certainly.
All right.
Please.
So, yes. All right. But before I do that, you brought up, yes, that the Jews, when it's appropriate for them, they're a race. And when it's appropriate for them, they're only a religion. All right? Now, I think people have misunderstood me in the past, because I say, and I stick to this, that Jews are not a race. All right? Now, don't misunderstand me here. I say that Jews are not a race because Jews are of mixed race. So they are actually opposite of race. But in a way, they are, this is the confusing part. In a way, they are a race. They're not just a religion, they're also a ethnicity, I would say.
Well, I would say that they were isolated enough in their breeding, but they're a particular type with particular type of combination. You have the Asiatic,
yes,
and
yes,
everything that led to the Khazarian component. But then, of course, originally this was of Semitic, a variant of Semitic people that some of the initial genes, at least, were from as well. But yes, a very unique combination, which perhaps I would argue have developed on an unconscious level some parasitic tendencies, the way in nature many species evolve to be a specific parasite of another species. And this can all be absolutely unconscious. Therefore, ones who even claim to be against everything of the race and religion on an unconscious level can still exhibit these traits when in societies of others. But that's the theory I've been building lately. But yes, a very specific combination, correct?
But see, the point, I don't want people to misunderstand me. Look, I'm saying that Jews are not just a religion. They are a religion. And I don't like identifying them as a race, because technically they're not a race. Although they are a people, they are a group of people, which they're not a race because they are of mixed race, which is the opposite of race, right? But they're a people. They are a parasitic people. But they're not a race like the Aryan. They're not a race like the Negroid. They're not a race like the Mongolian.
Right, but I think the most important aspects come down to brain structure, how the brain is wired. And among each of the races that we know as such, as well as the different combinations of mixed race out there, we have these brain differences, this difference in wiring. And yes, exactly. That is what I think you're alluding to when you mentioned the parasitism.
Yes. You see, Jews come, I've said this over and over again, Jews come in many different, sizes, colors, costumes. They're chameleons. You know, you have the Mongolian Jews, who are called the Mizrahi Jews. And then you have, like, the Mexican-style Jews, who I refer to them as mestizos. You have the Semitic Middle East type of House of Mossad type Jew. You have the Ashkenazi Germanic type Jew. You have the Sephardic, the Sephardic, I believe, is kind of like the Spaniard or the Portuguese type Jew. You know, we have all these different, the parasite has mixed in with all of the different races and ethnicities. This is why they cannot be considered a race, but they are without any doubt a people, right? So, I guess to conclude, I want to explain what I mean, why I am against or anti-apartheid, okay? I am anti-apartheid because apartheid implies that you have non-whites living within a white nation, okay? Now, we have colors and Negroids and Jews living in South Africa. And at one time, the laws were where they forced us to separate. But you see, I take it one step further. I am a separatist, because a separatist implies that there are no non-whites in the country in the first place. So you see, apartheid, to me, you know, it has non-whites in your country, and we need to separate ourselves completely if we are ever to become the great Aryan race, which I think we are destined to become. We can't have any other outsiders interfering with our growth and development. What I can't wrap my mind around is why being a separatist and living amongst only our own is so hateful to these Negroids and Jews. I can't wrap my mind around it. When we want to separate, well, that's racist. But then, if they insist on living within our nations and around us, well, we automatically oppress them.
Well, it's obvious. It's obvious, William. I mean, they recognize, you say some of the blacks mentioned how they had things better during apartheid. Well, when the Boer were in control is the important thing. So in the back of their mind, these people you are referring to now probably know that they have some benefits from whites being in their society, and they want to exploit that. So they want to have their cake and eat it too. They want the best of both worlds, and they don't even see the hypocrisy. Perhaps they might even be blind to their own hypocrisy in some of these issues. They just mention one point when it's convenient, mention the other point when it's equally convenient, and not realize how they are mutually exclusive.
Yep, but they'll never admit that, though.
It might not even occur to them. This might not even be something that they're processing cognitively, consciously. Definitely.
Well, I don't know how it couldn't.
Right, yeah.
I don't know. Maybe I'm giving them too much credit. I don't know, but
Maybe. That's what I'm saying. In some cases, perhaps the mentality, it just doesn't notice things that contradict one another in all cases. If you're below a certain IQ or near a threshold, it could be an issue in some cases. In others, could be a case of someone being in denial and definitely having something they're consciously doing to block out some of this information.
They really do, on one level, envy us, and they hate themselves because they see our greatness and our creativity and our brilliance on a daily basis. And it irritates them, I believe, on a conscious level, which makes them want to hate us more. Now, this, why would they want to be around us if just merely looking at us creates this envy? Creates this hatred. You know, envy implies that if they can't have something, then nobody can have it. So when they come and see our beautiful gardens and our living spaces compared to their litter and dirt, where no grass or anything green will grow on their little plots, their little township shacks, you know, that's a reminder every day of how they really are inferior. And I don't mean that in a way where I'm saying that we're, oh, I don't know. See, I don't want to come across as if I'm lording over them by calling them inferior to us. It's just self-evident. Yeah, so I hope everyone understands why I'm against apartheid. They shouldn't be here in the first place. You know, there are, what's the name of that little country? There's a small country within South Africa. What's it called? Botswana, I believe. I believe it's Botswana. It's a small country within the South African borders where a particular tribe of Negroids was granted this country. Now, this is what needs to be done with the Boer republics or with the self-determination of our Boer folk. But no, 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 we're not allowed. We're not allowed.
Well, of course, William, that's not allowed. That's a worldwide phenomenon. Now, for whites to be disallowed any homelands. Whites are not allowed to have any homelands in the future, right? I mean, this new world order, this Jew world order, sees whites as being uniquely oppressive, evil, and needing to be stomped out eventually. But
even
certainly having no homelands is something that only applies to whites. Of course, every other race is...
Yeah, but how can we be evil and oppressive if all I desire is to be left alone?
Well, no one sees that. A lot of this colonialism from past is what people bring up. In the modern world, the military-industrial complex is orchestrated by Jews, but no one sees that. They blame whites. Many people don't even see a difference between whites and Jews out there, still today in the world.
Yeah.
A lot of people out here calling into Patriot Radio, for example, they don't have a clue about this, would not believe any of this to be the case without extensive information brought to their attention in future. And I see how it's almost impossible to draw sympathy for the Boer folk in South Africa from any of us in the rest of the world, because most people out in America, possibly in Europe as well, but certainly in America, they have no idea of this history of the Boer in South Africa. They don't know anything about that history. And to them, all they think of when they think of Africa is being blacks' homeland, you know, where blacks are. And they would think of the whites as being the ones who shouldn't be there in South Africa, not the blacks, because they wouldn't understand these subtle differences you have pointed out. I wasn't aware of this, actually, before you came to the network. And if I wasn't even aware of this, that the whites were predominantly in South Africa, in the tip of Africa, in South Africa, there before much any blacks truly had made it their own, so to speak. You know, that's something that people need to know. And you're not going to get any support from the rest of the world because they think of Africa as being for blacks, not for whites. And as I say, they don't know the history of the Dutch and other settlers.
The Boer is made up of Germanic folk. Now, there are other white people of French and Dutch background, but they were part of the colony. A lot of these French, so-called French, they were Jews. They converted to Protestantism, to Calvinism, or the Reformed Church, and then they settled to the Netherlands, and then ultimately came to South Africa after they converted. There were some white French and some white Dutch, but you have to understand that these Murano Jews who converted from Judaism to the Calvinist Reformed Church, that is how they were able to come on the Dutch East India Company ships with von Rybeck in 1652. You could only be a Protestant and come to these colonies. Now, when people think of Protestant, they automatically think of white people. Now, what most of our folk don't seem to comprehend is that Jews can convert to Protestantism and yet be racially mixed-race Jew and blend in with us. And this is how they have gotten control of this colony. Besides their own people, higher up elitist type Jews, such as the de Rothschild family who own the Dutch East India Company. You know, the Rothschild is the same family that controls all of the currencies of the world. So this, when they decided to consolidate power and the Dutch East India Company granted power of this colony to England, well, it wasn't the white English. It was the Yiddish British of the United Kingdom who have had control of South Africa as the colony. And these pesky Germanic Boers came here under the conditions that we will not abide by the Cape laws. We will speak our own language. And we, what was the other condition? Laws, language, and religion. They didn't want any part of the Cape when it came to laws, religion, and yes.
Okay, so as far as those who colonized the areas, this was Dutch, predominantly due to the Dutch East India Company, and French settlers who were generally Jews who had converted, and then English, as you describe, who, of course, were under the thumb of Judaic influence, if you will. But the actual Boer people are pretty much completely Germanic.
Yes, absolutely.
Got it. Thank you.
Absolutely. It was Cromwell in 1650 allowed the Jews back into Britain. But in my estimation, the Jews were always in Britain. But what Cromwell did was basically allowed the Jews to have, political power and financial power in Britain via the City of London. Okay, now, the Dutch East India Company was owned by the de Rothschild family, and what did he do? Well, he gave power to the of the colony of South Africa via the City of London, which is controlled again by de Rothschild. So what he did was consolidate power, all right? And this happened the same time when Cromwell allowed Jews to basically regain power in Britain. And in 1652, this is when de Rothschild family, via his Dutch East India Company, well, brought these colonists, if you will, to South Africa. It's very convenient that 1652 are such close dates, considering Jews were granted back into England. You understand the point I'm making here, or the connection I'm trying to make?
Yes, yeah, very, very good point to stress. I do see how it all ties in. That helps.
Now, you could even take it a step further and throw the United States into all this, especially when it comes to New York and New Amsterdam. It was the same Dutch East India Company ship, the same de Rothschild family who brought people to Ellis Island in New York. Which is why, well, a lot of the same type people you'll find, for instance, in the southern parts of the country of the United States, you'll find are very similar to the Germanic Boer. And it's not a coincidence that the Civil War happened just as the Boer Wars happened. They were basically the same Germanic type families and people. Not very many people actually make that connection.
Well, yes. No, those are all interesting timelines to point out as far as what was going on in other parts of the world, how it all correlates with these agendas of this international Jewry.
That's right. Well, on that note, my friend, I think I am going to wrap up the show. So, folks, thank you for listening. Thank you, everybody. Cheers.